Okay, everyone. So, let's start. And as usual, I give a quick introduction to some meditation topic, and then we'll try it out in practice afterwards. And one of the things that I have been talking about recently, also talked about yesterday, is the importance of view, right view, seeing the world in the right way for as a support for one's meditation practice. And you see this in the suttas. The Buddha talks about this. He talks about how satipatthana practice, which basically is things like mindfulness or breathing and these kind of things, how they are always supported by looking at the world in the right way. And the reason why that is so powerful is because when you look at things in the right way, it basically enables you to let go of things. And that is a critical issue in Buddhist meditation, is the ability to let go. It is the holding on, the thinking mind, which thinks and thinks and thinks. The reason it thinks is because basically you are holding on to things and you're grasping onto things. That's why the thinking kind of carries on seemingly by itself, but of course it's never really by itself. It is fueled by something. So the ability to let go depends on our view, our outlook, our values in life. And one of the things, sometimes you have like little crises in life, mini crises, things that happen to you. And sometimes these things, if you tackle them in the right way, with intelligence, with a spiritual point of view, actually they can become very useful for your meditation practice. Which is very interesting. You turn a problem into something beneficial. And this is kind of a really wholesome way of dealing with problems. And right now, the Buddhist society has been going through a little of a kind of mini crisis, things kind of happening, which is kind of not very pleasant, perhaps. And the first thing that always occurs to me when these things happen, the first thing is that there's nobody's fault, really. Everybody in an organization such as this is always trying to do their very best to do what is right. And very often, just opposing points of view that cause clashes and problems, it means that we can't move forward. That's kind of the first thing, to always remember that, because if you don't remember that, you carry around ill will and problems in your heart. And if you carry that with you, there's no way you're going to have any peace in your meditation practice. First of all, let go. It's nobody's fault. This is part of nature. And the second thing that you recognize is that these things are inevitable. Here we are in one of the kind of great organizations anywhere, where people do so much good work and we've done so many good things over the long, long period of time, several decades. And still these things happen. Even when you have the very best of people, the best of intentions, all the right things coming together, still these problems arise. And you start to realize that this is just the nature of the world. It has to be this way, it can't be any other way. It has to be this way because this world is inherently, people come from different points of view, from different angles. It is inherently unreliable, inherently impermanent, inherently unsatisfactory. So what happens then is you get a kind of weariness with all of this. Okay, you look at the Buddha society, we have done our best. And at the end you realize still it is kind of unsatisfactory. And that enables you to let go of the whole thing. You realize it's not just the Buddha society, the whole world is like that. So you use this as a chance for developing, if you like, insight or clarity about the nature of things. So by dealing with problems in life in a skillful way, it actually has a very powerful effect on our meditation practice. Helps you to let go, helps you to let things be, and then that, of course, will allow you that peace in your meditation practice. So use every little crisis, big crisis, whatever it is, use it wisely. And if you use it wisely, it actually is a great potential for growth. So see if you can use a little bit of this in your meditation, and let's try it out in practice. Okay, so as always, make sure you take plenty of time at the beginning just to ease yourself into the meditation. The most important part of the meditation practice is actually what happens at the very beginning. Just to learn to be very patient, learn to relax, learn to have the right attitude, a sense of positive well-being. And as you do get all of these things right, all you really have to do is wait for things to settle down. Give yourself time. We are moving from busyness to peace, and it always takes a bit of time to make that transition. So just sit back, relax, and enjoy what is already here. And as you do so, you find that things become very peaceful relatively quickly. But don't move ahead too fast. Allow things to happen naturally. And make sure that you always give yourself plenty of time for this process to happen. Please don't go to the meditation object too quickly. Wait until you have a sense of clarity and awareness. And then the meditation happens almost by itself. When the mind is ready, it's as if the breath appears and you just follow along automatically. But don't go too fast. Just wait in the present moment. Wait for things to happen. Wait till you feel really at ease, really aware, really relaxed, just enjoying the peace that is already there. as you go through this process of calming down and letting go of the world outside, it can be very useful just to remind yourself very briefly and very gently about how unreliable the world outside actually is. How in the end everything is uncertain and unreliable. And if you do this in the right way and you let go in the right way, you find yourself withdrawing inside of yourself into your real home, into the safety that you build up for yourself inside, because you understand where true safety and a true refuge from worldly phenomena is to be found. Okay, so we're getting very close to the end of the meditation. But before we come to the end, please just review your meditation very briefly. And just ask yourself how you feel now, how it compares to when you started out. And try to see the relationship between the two, the causality, the conditions, the ways you use your mind that actually lead to whatever state you are now. In this way, try to understand how the development of mind actually happens. Okay, everyone, any questions or comments on today's meditation session? Yeah. Great, thank you. Okay, everybody happy? Yeah, no comments? Okay, good. So we'll take some comments from various places. The first question is from India. How do you keep your mind free from ill will under the threat of violence? Okay, so when you are under the threat of violence, how do you avoid getting angry in return with the person who is threatening you? And it is not easy. None of these things are easy. But the way to do this is to understand that the person who is violent, they are the ones who have the real problem. Yeah, it is not you. And the more you can see that they are the ones with the problem, and you are, of course, you have to bear the brunt sometimes of that violence. But just understanding that they are in a far worse position than you are, because they are creating so much bad karma for themselves. And understand that people often don't want to be violent. They are violent because of causing conditions within themselves. So they are violent despite their understanding that actually they shouldn't be violent. It is this idea of non-self in Buddhism. We are the sum total of the causes and conditions that have worked on us. So if somebody is violent, it's almost like they are on this automatic process, just doing things that they are used to doing. Not really understanding that they're causing tremendous suffering for themselves in the future. And by doing that, by turning the attention a little bit away from yourself and towards the other person, try to understand, they have a far greater problem than you have. And try to see it a little bit from almost from their point of view, the compulsiveness in their unskillful actions. And if you can do that, you can actually start, even in difficult situations, you can maybe start to reduce the ill will a little bit and occasionally even have compassion. But sometimes, of course, if you are under a threat of violence, sometimes what you have to do is you have to change your situation so that you can move away from that threat of violence, because in the long run, it's very hard for it not to have a negative impact on you. So if you have the opportunity to change your situation, even if it is a bit scary, sometimes it is really worthwhile. Okay, question from the USA. How do you find peace and balance when your mind is filled with rage and hate from the past? Okay, so we have a theme going here, I think. So you have to try to let go of that rage and hate, first of all. It's very hard to find peace and balance while you have rage and hate, yeah? So first of all, deal with the rage and hate, then you get the balance. And it's very similar to what I was saying to the previous question. Very often, when you have rage and hate, it is very often, almost always, towards other people. Other people are the problems in our life. Yeah, so remember, other people, they are like robots, they are like red lights, they do unskillful and stupid things. Not because they actually want to be evil, they do it because they are just deluded, they haven't got a clue what's going on, they are conditioned from the past, they are just causing enormous suffering for themselves through their unskillful actions. Yeah, they are. This is what the non-self idea is all about. And the more you get into that idea, the easier it is to forgive almost anything. Anything can be forgiven. So just use these ideas of remembering how conditioned people are. They are doing things not because they want to do things, but because they haven't got much choice. And obviously, they are deluded. They are unskillful. They are ignorant. They have no idea what's happening here. And slowly, what you do here is you turn the attention away from yourself. Rather than feeling victimized, you start to have compassion even towards the other person, yeah, or other people, or whatever they are. It's very powerful and very, it's doable, yeah. I mean, I know this from personal experience, that this is doable. It's just a matter of putting it into practice and doing it again and again and again, and gradually you get there. We have a question from France. Is there a proper way to do asubha bhavana to overcome sensual desire? There is, and the suttas do actually recommend the asubha bhavana. Asubha bhavana, by the way, means the development of the non-beautiful aspect, yeah, especially of the body. So sometimes called the repulsive aspect. To overcome sensual desire, yes, I would say it really depends on your life situation. If you are living an ordinary lay life, say you have a partner in life or you even have a family and all these kind of things, I would not recommend to use asubha bhavana to overcome sensual desire, because you're going to have a problem. You're going to have two things clashing with each other, your normal relationship on the one hand and the asubha bhavana on the other. Yeah, it's going to go completely diametrically opposite directions. And the problem is that the sensual desire is always going to win out, because that seems much more attractive than the asubha bhavana. So it's really going to be very hard. So if I were you, I wouldn't use that method to overcome these things. I would rather use more like general reflections on the limitations of the sensual world. If you read the suttas, like beautiful sutta full of nice similes, Majjhima Nikaya, middle length sayings, number 54. 54, I think it is, 56, 54, something like that. The Potalya Sutta is full of beautiful similes about the limitation of the sensual world, understanding the kind of what that is about. But I wouldn't try that too much in lay life, because it's going to be very frustrating. However, if you do live a life where you are celibate, you live by yourself, you just have your own life, then you can try a little bit of asubha bhavana. And what you should do it on your own body, not on other people. Just do it on yourself, and basically see your own body for what it is, all the elements, all the parts of your own body. That's all you have to do. It's almost like an act of imagination. And just by doing that a little bit, you take away the sense of beauty in the body. The beauty is a surface thing. The inner parts of the body are not really beautiful. They are functional, they do their job, but you wouldn't normally call them beautiful as such. And that can take away some of that sensual desire. Don't take it too far. Don't become obsessed with this, because if you become obsessed with it, it can have negative consequences. But just do it to help you overcome any excessive desires that you may have. Okay. That's it for today. So let's just pay respect to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha.